Good afternoon. Welcome. We will run quickly through the slides here to show you the Women Peacemakers project. When you think of women peacemakers, what events are which women come to mind? Anybody? What do you think of when you think of women peacemakers?
Who'd you say?
I said Joan Baez.
Joan Baez, good.
Great. Who else?
Who?
Helen Caldicott.
Oh, wasn't it great that she was here? I hope you all heard
Sorry,
her.
Emma Goldman. And you said Mother Teresa. What about events? What events come to mind? It's women, it's movement makers.
Green Common.
Who else?
Trojan Women.
Well,
I'm part of a group of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrow, and on the 5th commemoration, we actually gathered family organizations from 17 countries. And so there were families affected by violence who had turned their grief into action for peace. So that was a very profound event and kind of brought together many of the women, but men as well.
Great. All right, a few more. Who do we have?
Creation of the UN.
Sorry?
Creation of the UN.
Great, what else?
I was thinking of Zeneca, Women's Peacekeepers, so Women's Peacekeepers.
Yeah, in Israel, there's the Coalition of Women for Peace, as well as Women in Black.
You
stand out in terms of events, they stand out every week for peace and get spit on.
They do, they're great.
Great.
Thank you.
Great. Do you all have a poster? There, a poster was put together. Everybody have one of these? The way this is set up is by region. We thought about doing it chronologically, but I think this illustrates how the women's peacemaking has spread throughout the world. So we tried to get some of the earliest in each region, North America and England, on the left. And then as you move to the right on the chart, you see the way it has spread throughout the world. Some of the earliest women in that particular era, all the way down to most of the ones at the bottom are current women peacemakers. This all began at Scripps College, all women's college, in Claremont, California. And while I was teaching international relations and peace research, during the Vietnam War, the whole issue of women's activity was very, very prominent. Joan Baez was mentioned as a good example. She actually started singing in Claremont. Her father was a professor at Harry Mudd College. So I began a course in the humanities on nonviolence in theory and practice. I tried to get away from just from reading books by Tolstoy or whatever, some of the great peace activists, and get the students involved in actually practicing nonviolence. This was not hard because there are plenty of causes, not only the war, but hunger and racial discrimination and so on. So in the process of this, we started collecting data about women peacemakers. I started a course in 1985 on women in peace. It was experimental. I don't think anybody ever taught a course on this. It was a great education for me, particularly to have women's insights into women's roles, and of course that this is very diverse. So what we did was to read the classics, Dorothy Day, Then I brought in peace activists, like Peace Pilgrim, who traveled all over the United States by foot, people like that, and local activists. There were a lot of them. And in the process, we thought it would be good to celebrate the birthdays. But this was a difficult process because it turns out that a lot of women, our birthdays aren't known. And but the more prominent ones that we celebrated, Virginia Woolf's birthday. And among my students was Karen Z, who you may have heard of, a very active peace activist who was involved in the Cambodian, after the Cambodian war. She was very active in establishing justice tribunals. So the we got, on the online version, we have the first women peacemakers, Catholic saints, some of whom you've heard of, others very famous. And then in the Renaissance, there were a lot of rulers. One of my favorites is Sophia, the Tsaress of Russia. We always think of it as terrible rulers of Russia, but Sophia was able to achieve long-lasting peace. This is unusual between two of her her neighbors, Poland on the west and China on the east. Some remarkable peacemakers, but the real movement of women peacemaking begins in the early 19th century. After the Napoleonic Wars, after the War of 1812, both in England and in the United States, you get women taking a leading part in the abolition movement. And the extraordinary thing about their leadership was that they insisted from the start that the solution for the slavery, in which a lot of men thought one was to deport all of the slaves to Africa, or let them resettle, as they would have put it, or to have a war to beat up the Southerners, which is what we ended up doing, the male solution for the problem. In 1838, Maria Chapman here decided that they would publicize the idea of nonviolence, they call it non-resistance, as a way of solving the problem of slavery. And she published a newspaper. This was done with the assistance of males. William Lloyd Garrison was one of the principal writers in the newspaper and leader. This wasn't solely a woman's organization, but this happened in England too. You had women asserting themselves, and the breakthrough was when women actually were allowed to speak. Criticize that the Muslim countries or other places in Africa where women are silenced or not encouraged to talk at all. But this was the break. This was really the breakthrough in the abolition movement, and this moved on into suffrage movement, and then into protests against imperialism, the Boer War, and the first Nobel Prize was awarded to Bertha von Suttner. Everybody's heard of her, I hope. But women were very active in finding alternatives to war, and this raised a lot of hopes before the First World War, but it all, of course, fell apart, and no one was willing to use those alternative methods of settling disputes. During World War I, there was a large expansion of women's activity in peace. One of my favorite examples is German women who went to Switzerland and started the Dada movement. Mama Dada, you probably Emma Hennings, and women like that were very radical in their production of Dada art to a protest against the war. But there were a lot of very aristocratic women in England and wealthy women in the United States who opposed the war. And as an outcome of this was the creation of the oldest international women's peace organization in the world, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, nearly 100 years old now, and which received the Nobel Prize. Well, actually, the prize went to the women. The real founder, Jane Addams, the founder of Hull House in Chicago, was the real spark of this, and Emily Balch, who got the prize after the Second World War. In the interwar period, there was a widespread expansion of this whole movement. It moved not only in Western Europe and partially in Eastern Europe, but all around the world, particularly in the British Dominions, Australia, South Africa, and so on. And women took the lead in producing works of art. Like the Dada movement, or poetry, and there's a lot of a great expansion. My favorite being Virginia Woolf's Three Guineas. Women who were involved in them, very active in the disarmament movement. There's a wonderful cartoon by the British cartoonist David Lowe, in which he satirizes the 1931 disarmament conference, and in which the crocodile, the wolves, and the tigers all say, "My friends, we have failed. We just couldn't control your warlike passions," as he addresses the people of the world. Of course, every women were terribly disappointed in that whole movement. Although a German woman, the leading feminist, was one of the participants, a delegate, actually, to the conference. Of course, she was in a minor position. This is true during the creation of the United Nations. Women were definitely in a subordinate role, but they had a major impact in changing the character of the United Nations Charter by insisting upon the equality of women. And there were a number of changes in the text of the charter that were brought in by women, like two of them that are shown here from Latin America. The Declaration of Human Rights, of course, was largely pushed through by Eleanor Roosevelt. Other men involved, but after the war, you get very active creation of protest movements, many of which you recognize here, in great variety. Now I want to turn it over to my daughter, Lynn.
Okay, so my father, as I said before, or we said before, he's been working on this this database for over 40 years, and we've been talking about, well, what do we do with all these women? He's had, 1,200 women in this database. So a couple years ago I met, I know Steve Gilbert really well. He's right here in the audience. Please give a shout out. Anyway, we were at an APHA University of Washington social on the Monday night, and he had just come back from Gaza, and I said, man, we got to do something about my father's women's database. It's just awesome. It's huge, and I wonder if there's a way we could get it online. And Steve goes, I'll do it. And I was like, really? Are you sure? So anyway, this is when we started the online peace project. So you can go to www.womeninpeace.org and go there. And there's over 1,000 women on it. And there's educational tools like this poster, which I'll explain more in a few seconds. So just the way the online version is set up is that there's more than 1,000 women, and there's a structure to the setup. So you can go in there and you can look on either a woman or a birthday, and you'll go in on her birthday and you'll click on that woman, you'll get a full bio. Like, this is an example of Rigoberta Manchu, born 1952. You get her birth date, full name, place in you're born, and then you'll get a quote and then the source of the picture. So when we started to develop the online version, my first question to my dad was like, well, Dad, criteria, what is a peacemaker? And how did you go about picking what is a woman peacemaker? So, you know, works towards stopping wars, resists violence nonviolently, works to remove causes and results of war and violence by nonviolent means. And one thing that he did tell me was like, well, and if a woman turns violent any time in her life, even if she was a peace activist before, that's it, she's off. So, and then we also started really thinking as we were putting together the poster, like, what about biases? And, you know, we really started to think about, well, this was in the English language, right? All the search Dad speaks several languages, and he was looking at French, German, and Dutch, you know, kind of writings, but that still, there's probably biases. And so we acknowledge his problem. We hope that in setting up the poster itself, you know, we fairly divided, you know, 7 women into 11 different geographies, but we acknowledge that there's biases, and please, you know, help us. We know that they're there. One other thing that we wanted to let you know about the online version is that, and it's obviously not on the poster, is that you can go to every single day of the year and find out when actions took place. So this is just an example. On March 8th, which is International Women's Day, these were like several actions. Actually, March 8th is a huge day, and there's 30 actions on there. But this is just an example of some types of actions that took place on that day. And then one other thing we just want you to know is, like, if you go online and download this, you can click on each person, and then the full bio comes up. So that's kind of a fun part about the poster. And then, so here, some of our challenges are that, you know, we solicit your help. We recognize that this isn't a perfect database, and so, in fact, there's women who are missing their birth dates, like Anne Wright, who is code pink. She was former colonel or lieutenant colonel in the military, and her birth date's not there. So she's not on the database. She deserves to be. Information is correct. For example, if you go to Wikipedia and look up Maria Chapman, her birth date is different from the birth date here, but we assure you, or my father assures you, that he did the research. He went into Boston, and the date is correct. So we'd love to have your ideas and corrections, and you know, our whole goal is to be able to link this database to other women's movements around the world and get even more women onto this database. And future challenges, we have 2 more slides and then we're done. Dad, did you want to get up and talk about this really quickly? There's just 2 more slides.
Very briefly, I want to emphasize the fact that women are still underutilized. If you look at the peace organizations, let's say in Syria today, no women are involved by the UN or anybody else, and yet there is a nonviolent women's group in Syria, very poorly reported by the newspapers, and they've been protesting against the Assad regime since the beginning in nonviolent way. This is an example of what the UN did in in the year 2000, the millennium year, insisted that women be used more for peacemaking and peace creating. We've ignored that. There is very little response to that. So, a pitch for more peacemaking by women. Yeah.
So these are Dad's favorite quotes.
Oh, some of my favorite quotes. Bertha von Suttner's last words on her deathbed said, "Lay down your arms." That was her, the title of the book that won the Nobel Peace Prize. And she said, "Say it to many. And Joan Baez, who ran a forum, or actually a training center in Palo Alto during the Vietnam War, wrote a wonderful book explaining one of the best expositions of nonviolence that I know of. And what she said, nonviolence is organized love. Love thine enemy, but confront his evil.
We're finishing up now, but in the discussion later, this is kind of one question we just wanted to ask. What can you do to inspire the next group of women leaders and what new movements do we see coming. So thank you very much. I'd love to acknowledge these people, and thank you for coming.
That was a great presentation. And just before we go on to the next one by Dr. Waitzkin, why don't we, if there's like one or two clarifying questions, and so we could have more discussion at the end. Yes, in the back?
Was how did we pick the women? I don't.
No. If you have examples of specific women which you excluded, which would otherwise have been included. Let me give you just a brief comment. I remember listening to Angela Davis recording some years ago, an old recording of hers when she was say 25 or something like that, and somebody said, you know, your work is wonderful and so forth, but you know, just for violence. So she said that the person who was interviewing her, and she said that Angela Davis wept. My ear is telling me that I support violence, right? You're a white man.
Ah.
You're a white man.
Did you hear that? Okay.
You're telling me that I support violence. So,
that's a great point. So I have to repeat this. So, Dad, it was about someone saying that Angela Davis was, it was Angela Davis, right? Angela Davis was violent, but it was a white man telling her that she was violent. She goes, "You're a white man telling me that I'm violent." And so I think, were you commenting or did you want to
No, so that was the premise of my question. I was curious to know which women you excluded on the basis of the criteria that you were mentioning. And you supported violence, therefore they got the opposite.
Okay, so do you have any memory of any women that you excluded based on that? And then we'll move on to the next.
Angela Davis taught in Claremont for a year. I got to know her there. This is a very difficult question, and I admit to being arbitrary about the division between violence and nonviolence. It's obviously a fuzzy line. For instance, when the suffragists were nonviolently protesting for their rights in England before the First World War, some of the women broke windows, and they were declared violent. They were jailed for that, imprisoned, and actually force-fed because of that. Now, that is an act of violence, clearly, to property. Gandhi solved this one for me in this way. When he was jailed, he put in charge a woman, Sarojini Naidu, India's great poet. And he approved her cutting the barbed wire to get into the salt works. So if you look at the story of that, you find that Gandhi approved of violence, but to property. And so the dividing line comes to, in my mind, when you damage people by vocal or other physical means. I don't know. It's a tough dividing line. I admit I have been somewhat arbitrary.
Thank you.